yellow, special education students, which is green, and English learners, which is red. The graph shows the percentage of those students at proficient or above in language arts. The summary of this data shows that an economically disadvantaged student is about 1.7 times more likely to be non-proficient than the general population. A special education student is 2.5 times more likely to be non-proficient in English language arts, and an English learner is 3.5 times more likely to be non-proficient. This includes, by the way, the redesignated fluent English proficient students. If we look at mathematics, the gap is a little narrower for economically disadvantaged and English learners, but it widens for special education students. Obviously, language is less of a factor in mathematics than English language arts, and so English learners gain ground in mathematics. Learning disabilities, it appears, become a little more pronounced in mathematics, and special education students lose ground. We need to note that all these groups are included in the total population scores. So as you look at the blue bar, recognize that the blue bar includes English learners. It includes socioeconomically disadvantaged students, and it includes students with disabilities. It might be more illuminating to compare each population only with those students who are not in that population. English learners with English-only students, for instance. And what do we see? Enough English learners to record a score above the Algebra 1 level. Similar, though slightly less dramatic, gaps exist for socioeconomically disadvantaged and special education students and their counterparts. When we look at it all together, for last year's testing, this is 2004-2005, we see what we saw in the beginning, that this is what the status quo produces. As we examine critical issues, we need to ask ourselves, a la the technology template, what is the consequence of the status quo? And that is mathematics. The answers to these data are not easy. They reflect very closely what is happening in California overall. There are reasons for the gaps. Disadvantages are disadvantages, and they will persist. Furthermore, there aren't a lot of models of folks who have beaten this portrait, and almost none of those which show promise come from relatively advantaged school districts such as ours. To take on this challenge would be to cover new territory for districts such as ours. I suspect, however, that the solutions are not rocket science, and they become as much a question of will as methodologies. We know, for instance, that the greatest single controllable factor in student achievement is the quality of the teacher. For our issues, what does the teacher know about the learning challenges of English learners? What methods are productive with students with disabilities? And what are the effects of poverty upon learning? We need to retrain ourselves to those questions. As we look at the demographics of students, it is also probably a good idea to look at the demographics of teachers. If we make progress at all, these are the folks who will do it. As you can see from this slide, 55% of our elementary teachers are 50 years old or older, and 36% are 55 years or older. In the next 5 years, we can anticipate significant turnover in our teaching force. At the secondary level, it looks very similar, with 57% at 50 years or older, and 32% at 55 or above. If declining enrollment continues, some of that attrition will just not be replaced. This means the folks responsible for the long-range addressing of these issues will come from either teachers new to the district or from the 45% or so of teachers who are under 50. What that means with respect to teacher recruitment, teacher training, and teacher retention measures will be very significant in how much progress we make. We've asked various groups to look at the overall input of the organization. That's the 30 pages of raw data and the 9-page summary and the student achievement data shared tonight. We also shared the criteria of identifying critical issues as those issues for which the maintenance of the status quo will result in serious negative consequences. And we've begun the process of prioritizing and ultimately costing approaches to the issues. We look forward to bringing back the thoughts of the organization to the board in the budget building process, not just with respect to identifying critical issues, but also in painting some kind of picture as to what it will take to address those issues and what the trade-offs are as we consider competing interests. We also welcome any reaction the board might have to this or anything else in the backup tonight, and would open the presentation to questions.
Mrs. Dickinson.
Looking at you, listening to you, Dr. Valentine, reaffirms how excited I am that you're our superintendent.
Thank you.
And it's things like being willing to look at the status quo and say, you know, we can, you know, make a change. We can do something. I just think that's an exciting perspective. And I think that you present things very well. Just a thought that came to my mind in terms of how you do change something. You know, thinking about teachers, you know, and on the skills for helping English language learners and special education students in special education. There's so many people who do have the skills, but you also need the environment where you have, you know, few enough students, let's say, to work with that you can actually use your skills. I mean, that's really important. Yeah. So if too many kids, you can't use the great skills that you have because there's too much going on. And I also think about one thing that crossed my mind is being willing to. It's not necessarily the youngest teachers that are willing to challenge the status quo. I mean, some of us, I'm not going to reveal my age. Some of the people about my age who, you know, grew up being willing to have big visions and challenge the status quo, you know, have sort of training and perspective on that. So I'm hoping that the younger teachers, too, are willing to, you know, rock the world a little bit to make things happen that are great for people and for children.
And if I could respond very briefly to that, two things. Number one, the status quo is not necessarily a negative term, and there's an awful lot of the status quo that merits preservation. And the second piece, part of the purpose of sharing the notion of status quo is and the demographics of teachers is to represent that as we strategically plan, we're planning for generations that will succeed us.
Other comments from board members?
You know, I'm kind of having deja vu with the old strategic planning process, even though this one is far more, it's more streamlined. It just seems we're trying to be less global than we were at sometimes in the past. But I'm still having trouble. When I was reviewing all the backup material, it's just there's so much stuff. But what I'm sensing is that in both the area of English language learners and economically disadvantaged students, we have a specific challenges related to our loss of senior teachers and recruiting retention and professional development of the teachers who will address these issues in the future, which is kind of suggesting to me that staff is sort of telling the board we need to, I don't know whether have additional focus or at least sustain our focus on recruiting and retention. Is that fairly summarized what you just told us?
Yes, I think it's going to take a special teaching force to look at the kinds of issues that we just identified. And that special teaching force is going to come from working with the folks that we currently have through professional development and through the recruitment and retention of those we actually do recruit through our personnel practices.
Mr. Spadafore.
Thank you. Dr. Valentine, in line with the presentation tonight, how will we approach determining future costs for expanding special ed programs, hiring the right graduates or the younger teachers out of the educational process, which appears to have a slowing down of graduates in education to become teachers, from what I've read, and with the English language student, how do we project, how will we start projecting those costs in the future to address moving away from the status quo? How can we draw those connections?
Well, I think the costing out is going to be a product of identifying what the specific needs are. If I use English learners as an example, but we could use special education as well, but starting with English learners, that there are really three components that we believe are necessary and that we're working on right now. One is we need to fill a gap that will actually tell us what our English learners know and are able to do. We need assessment measures that tell us where the baseline is for English learners and that will actually trace the progress and skills that we value for English learners. Such things exist in a very rough kind of level with certain kinds of testing, but we're going to need to scan the field or develop our own, either way, tests which really measure and give us something to do with our English learners specifically. Secondly, we need a workforce that is trained in strategies for making our, in the jargon of the business, making our input comprehensible to English learners, because there's really two things that are required there. One is English acquisition, which is only half the battle, and the other half of the battle is maintaining normal or accelerated progress with respect to academics. There are models out there in isolated places that we would need to look at if we were to duplicate that. They largely involve being able to provide English learners or other students in academic need with double and triple doses of key core subjects, specifically English language arts or mathematics. That's a staffing issue, but and it's also a methodology issue, but it's something that we have to look at. And the third piece is that the materials that we have need to be suited to the needs of English learners or disabled students as well. So costing out would involve taking a look at the model that we're looking at and what kind of staffing we have and what kind of staffing we would need, and that would be a cost. Looking at the assessment issues and what we have and what we need, and that would be a cost. And then looking at the material issues and what we have and what we need, and that would be a cost. And it won't be a small ticket item.
And then just a follow-up.
Please.
Does the issue regarding funding of those future costs that are brought to light begin now as we prepare for the next year, the year after, and the year after in terms of budget discussions?
Yes. I think what the board should expect and that what we wish to deliver as staff is actually modules of proposals that would come forward, modules in the area of special education, modules in the area of English learners, and modules in the area of socioeconomically disadvantaged needs, if that were a critical issue the board directs us to address. And looking at the budget situation, there are things you will have to make choices on that we can start on now and things that we will look for the future.
Mrs. Dickinson.
And doesn't class size reduction fit into that too? And that's expensive. But
the issue of class size reduction is takes a number of different forms. If we're talking about reducing the adult to student ratio, there's been a lot of progress that has been made by having trained paraeducators as well as trained teachers in the classroom for specified double and triple dosing of students in language arts and mathematics. It may not translate directly, and I think it is probably beyond the means of the board to reduce class size in a significant way and do anything else.
Mr. Millar.
I think what I find disturbing is that so many of these things are things we're going to have to do anyway. And it's going to squeeze out a lot of the other considerations in strategic planning. You often remind us that when we make decisions to spend money on things, we are also making a decision to give up spending money on other things. And this is disturbing because the area of special ed and EL students, we have to provide the programs, and it's going to mean some of the other things, maybe reconfiguration on the secondary level, at-risk students, some of these other things suffer because we have to spend the money in other areas.
If I could just shed a little hope on that, paying attention to any one of these issues is may have profound impacts upon all of the issues that we're looking at, and that's the first thing. And the other thing is a critical issue in a school district that, again, the board will struggle with and staff will do what we can to support and help you with it, is that balance is a critical issue in a school district, and that's something you will have to fight with.
Mrs. Botwin and then Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. I enjoyed reading over the, although it took quite a bit of time, the strategic planning identification of all critical issues, but I'm very pleased with it, Ed, because I feel it covers almost every base.
Yeah,
you know, one way or another, we can always say, what's in our strategic plan? You know, we can go. Your presentation tonight was interesting and somewhat surprising, but, you know, the last meeting, when we had that wonderful presentation by the Special Ed Study Committee group teachers, I'm quoting from page 3 in the minutes. I had marked this because I felt this was something that was certainly not just look at their education per se in special ed, but it says, teachers describe facing increased challenges as more students with severe needs are mainstreamed, and urge the board to provide additional support based on specific cases rather than a formula based on enrollment. And I had hoped that we would have this come back at some future time, and I was going to talk about it later on too, but these are the kinds of things we look at, not just, and I see where you're coming from, where we want to find a better curriculum or a more adaptable curriculum to support our EL or our special ed, but at the same time, we want to support the situation in the classroom, and so this, I think, as we would all agree, needs to be very, very carefully balanced. No matter what kind of testing we do, if we have, as these teachers suggested in the special ed, if they have teachers in the classroom with special needs, it is very disruptive, and nobody's going to make much progress. So we got to balance out here somehow, and that's your job, sir.
Thank you.
Well, Ed, I commend you on this. This is very comprehensive. And in looking through all of the suggestions, I guess you would call them suggestions, that came out of the various meetings and groups that you talked to, I mean, there is nothing on these many pages of lists that I could look at and not say, well, of course I want that, and I want that, I want all of it. It's, you know, it's like a menu on which everything is good. So I'm wondering, is it possible for you to tell us in speaking with the, you know, management team and all the various groups that you dealt with, are there any one, two, or three subject areas of concern that rose to the top among our staff, the people who are, you know, really in the trenches?
Yeah, I would characterize this as really preliminary input, but the basic ideas of the 9-page summary that's in your backup, and we massaged that a little bit. And we took an initial ranking, and we took it in two groups so far. We need to go to the PTA, PTO presidents in March. But we went to the management teams, consisting of all management personnel in the district, and we went to curriculum council, which has representatives of teachers from every school in the school district, and did a ranking. Not surprisingly, the addressing of that achievement gap that we just shared today seemed to be the highest focus. There was some folks that wanted to address the whole gap and others that wanted to focus on English learners, but the concept was to take a look at that achievement gap. The second was the teacher staff training and teacher staff recruitment piece was another issue that scored high. And then there were a number of things that came in after that ranked high, but just weren't as high as those things. Compensation is obviously something that we need to address as a school district, and that was not lost on us. And counseling functions scored big. Site staff support was another item that scored big, which was essentially adding support staff at individual school sites. Those were the biggest ones so far, and we need to clarify with those groups what exactly their take is on the direction with each of those broad brush topics, and we'll be discussing that in the coming weeks.
Thank you.
Mrs. Dickinson?
On the recruitment issue, I thought that the recruiting people on the probationary status rather than temporary would be, you know, desirable for people looking for positions here. I think that's a really important point, as much as possible. But I wanted to say something in follow-up to what Walter was saying about spending so much on programs for English language learners and at risk and cutting out all these other options, perhaps, because that costs so much. But it's, you don't just have to have a program on, you know, how to read or speak English. And I want to make my plug for music, because the research shows that music helps in all these areas, even at-risk students. It helps students to be engaged and happy about themselves and know how to learn, develop their brains, and, you know, experiences with symbols, which translates into reading, and ensemble, which helps behavior. And there's so many things about music that help in all these areas. So investing in music would be a way of investing in some of these other areas.
You bet. And I want to keep re-emphasizing the notion we didn't discuss every potential critical issue here, and certainly whatever input the board wishes to provide individually or collectively as a board, we will look at. But that issue of balance is one to take into consideration. That balance is important, and you can get out of balance easily.
It doesn't seem as if anybody else has got anything to say, so I'll close up the conversation, I think, at this point. You and I had an interesting chat Thursday, and I think one of the things that would be interesting for the board to hear is maybe some of the conversation that you and I had about outcomes and where we would like to see students who exit our programs, who graduate or whatever, because I think that we have dreams about where we want those students. Certainly, that's what drives the process, is what we want the end to be. And maybe you could talk about some of that and what your thinking on those issues is. And then the other thing that I'd like to suggest, too, is that I think when we look at the strategic planning, and I don't see us sweeping the high school reorganization or anything like that under the sweeping it away, because things like the double and triple dosing of reading have changed the way our elementary schools look and the way we're delivering education in our elementary schools fundamentally. I think that this board has a strong interest in the high school reconfiguration and what we want that to look like for our students, and what kinds of things that we can do to make sure that all of our students are achieving, not being left behind. So if that's my comment on that. If you'd like to talk, though, for just a second about what you see as outcomes or how we might tie what we would like our students to be able to do when they graduate to the strategic planning process.
Yeah, you might have to prompt me, Chris. I was
I'm going to prompt you the best I can. I was hoping you would prompt me.
I was doing really well in the car last Thursday, but as I stand up at the mic, I'll tell you one thing. The whole notion of what's sometimes called backward mapping, I think, is important to strategic planning. And as we bring to you ideas about English learners or ideas about special education support, which would have to include support in the classroom, that we do need to start with what, in the case of English learners, what level of language proficiency do we anticipate happening and occurring over what period of time, and what steps would it take to get there? Part of our conversation, Chris, that I recall was looking at a program like Reading Recovery, for instance, which at some point in time in the past, someone looked at the issue of reading and said, you know, getting our kids off on the right foot with respect to reading is so important that we are willing to make the kind of investment that it takes. And there is no cheap fix for any of these problems that we're talking about. And a very large sum of money went into Reading Recovery. One of the things that I did share in that conversation, Chris, and I don't know whether it's relevant to this or not, is that if you look at class size reduction and what it cost in the state of California to reduce class size reduction from 28 to 20, it was a huge ticket item. My suspicion is when you reduce class size and there's no programmatic thing that accompanies class size reduction and there's no emphasis on recruiting the number of high-quality teachers that it takes to staff a reduced class size, your outcomes become kind of restricted. That personal opinion, I have no scientific data to back it up, but had the state of California invested something similar in full-service reading recovery so that every six-year-old in the state of California received 30 minutes of one-on-one reading instruction from the most highly trained teachers in the field of reading for 16 weeks in a row, we probably would have gained more student achievement than what we did through class size reduction. So strategically, there are things to think about.
Great. Mrs. Roger.
Dr. Valentine, regarding the issue of recruiting and retaining teachers, historically, if I'm remembering right, we allow teachers that we hire to bring with them up to 10 years of service credit?
That's correct.
Okay, so we acknowledge up to 10 years. We have not previously had a problem recruiting teachers.
I'd say that's accurate, too, in most areas.
Okay, and we don't have a really high rate of attrition among our teachers. Most who come do find that they want to stay. So what we're talking about here is acknowledging the high cost of living in this area and trying to find some ways to address that for our employees.
I think that would be big, yes. There are other issues. Keeping employees who are trained and ready to go and have lengthy futures in the business is an advantage, too.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Valentine. And I think speaking for the board, we look forward to seeing how the strategic planning process plays out in terms of budgetary recommendations that we actually will be starting to see within about a month or two, if I'm not mistaken. All right, let's move on to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like something pulled. Item number 4. Action on California High School Exit Exam Waiver Requests for Students with Disabilities. Item number 5, Approval of Certificated and Classified Personnel Items. Item number 6, Acceptance of Donations. 7, Approval of Furniture and Equipment Requests. Number 8, Approval of Purchase Orders. 9, Approval of Warrants and Payroll. 10, approval to resubmit consolidated application for funding categorical aid programs, 2004-2005 LEA reporting form for NCLB Title I, Part A, and homeless education. Number 11, approval of extended field trip requests, San Luis Obispo High School Concert Band to Arizona State University, Northern Arizona University, and a tour of the Grand Canyon National Park. Item number 12, approval of extended field trip request, San Luis Obispo High School ROP Virtual Enterprise class attending the Virtual Enterprise Trade Fair in New York, New York. Item number 13, action on claim against the district, Charles B. Coleman, parent of minor Henry August Coleman. Item number 14, okay. Item number 15, approval of master tenant lease escalation adjustment for Old Pacheco Elementary School. Item number 16, approval of master tenant lease escalation adjustment for Sunnyside Elementary School. Okay.
Move approval of 4, 5, 6, 8 through 13 and 16. Did you pull 15,
no, 15.
John? 15.
15. Do I have a second on that?
Second.
Second. It's been the motion by Mr. Millar, second by Mr. Spadafore. Is there any discussion on those items? Seeing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6 to 0. Item number 7, Mr. Spadafore?
The only thing that I wanted to have probably corrected on that is on the back page where you go to the item under the general fund for the micro tower, the price is shown as 611 something, and then the extension out is 6,000. Are there 10 of those? Okay, then that's corrected. Okay, thanks. And I don't have any other on that.
Would you like to make a motion on this one, sir?
To pass it.
I hear a motion by Mr. Spadafore, a second by Mrs. Dickinson. All in favor?
Aye.
Passes 6-0. Mrs. Dickinson? Okay. Item number 14, action on claim against the district. John DeGarabedian. Mr. Millar, you pulled that?
Yes, I did. And I appreciate, is it DeGarabedian? Is that how you say your last name, sir? Okay. I pulled it in part because I wanted to explain generally that in the claims process, a claim has to be brought to the board, and typically the board denies the claim because we're not in a position to evaluate the merits. This, by denying the claim, it allows us to turn the claim over to our insurance carrier, who have the resources to actually investigate the claim and determine the facts surrounding the claim and what outcome they want to recommend to us or what outcome they want to tell us that we, they think we should do. Sometimes it's not a recommendation. In view of the nature of this claim, I'm very uncomfortable with a prolonged discussion in a public forum that frankly is premature and really isn't going to change the outcome. Because what we're being asked to do tonight is really kind of a pro forma sort of administrative function of turning down the claim so that the whole process can go forward from this point. And I understand your concern about additional time and cost involved in it, but unfortunately, as a board, we sit here, we don't have the resources and ability to explore the factual basis for every claim. That's why we go ahead and turn down. I'm assuming the board will decide to follow the staff recommendation and deny the claim and then let the process go forward. And I'm sensitive to your inconvenience and costs involved in that, but it's really the only effective way that I think the board should handle it. And with that being said, I don't want to deny Mr. DeGarabedian the chance to speak on this issue. I do think the board should deny the claim and that we should go forward with the item, action on the item.
Okay, is there anybody else who'd like to speak to this item from the board?
I want to say one quick thing.
Mrs. Dickinson.
I think it's important for people to know and for you to know that the board does listen and does consider things, and we're glad that you came. And I'm glad, I think Walter was very proficient with language there, explaining that it'll be, you know, looked at. So thanks for showing up and coming.
And that said, is there any more discussion from the board? Okay, I would take comments from the floor at this point. Is there anybody who would like to speak to this item? Mr. DeGarabedian, and you have 3 minutes, sir. Yes, please. Go over there, and if you would, sir, state your name and 3 minutes, please.
John Deregear, Beadian, Los Osos. That's members of the board, staff. I appreciate your explanation. That makes it much more clear to me, at least. So even by denying my claim tonight, I still will be possibly in contact with these insurance carriers and whatnot. You're not actually denying that claim. You're not closing the insurance claim. You're actually turning it over to them.
Yes, and if, I think what I'd like to do is have Mr. Miller address this.
Well, Mr. Millar explained it very well. What will happen to your claim now is it will be referred to the insurance company, and they will make the next level of decision about your claim. And you will still have rights to pursue the claim legally if should you choose to use them. But in terms of the procedures of the board, they traditionally disallow the claim so that it can be referred to the insurance company for further action.
I appreciate that. It read as though you were denying the insurance claim itself. And so I appreciate your explanation. And thank you for your time.
Great. Would somebody like to make a motion on this item?
Move approval of item 14.
Mr. Millar made the motion. Would somebody like to make a second?
Second.
Mrs. Rogers seconded it. All in favor?
Aye.
Carries 6-0. Item number 16, I believe that was also you, Mr. Spatterfor.
That's correct. The request is to retain the present rental at that location for this year or the next year in the lease, and there's an exercise of an option possible after this next year. And the point I wanted to bring up is if we consider not increasing the rent for this year with the option for next year lying with the lessee, what about exploring a quid pro quo that if we retain the rent this year at what it was last year, that he exercises option for the fourth year, and therefore we have that done earlier in consideration for us conceding the rent increase?
Mr. Miller, would you like to comment on that?
I would. I would be more than happy to pursue that idea with the leaseholder. I would appreciate from the board the instruction or authorization to either proceed with or without his agreement. But given that you are going to be giving up something, is he going to also be exercising an additional piece? Be more than happy to pursue that vigorously if you wish.
I was just going to mention also in light of that comment in our discussion that considering the circumstances behind his request to forego the increase, asking us to forego the increase, the likelihood of him using the option for the fourth year may also be unlikely. So if he is unwilling to move the option of the fourth year earlier and accept it, then I would suggest that the board not decrease the rent that's already agreed to in the contract, since that probably will be his last year anyway.
I think those are excellent ideas, Mr. Spatafor. It seems to me, though, we should probably table this item and bring it back. If we actually took some official action on it, then it kind of makes the process of going back to negotiate a little bit moot. But
I agree with you on that, to do that.
And I'm wondering whether this should come back maybe initially in closed session as a negotiation, real estate negotiation item, and at least since we've aired all this, but at least figure out our own strategy as far as the board and staff are concerned.
In light of Mr. Spatterford's comments, I think it would be appropriate in closed session.
Do we have a time crunch as far as approval?
March 1st is when the escalation clause goes into effect.
Okay, so with the board's consent, we'll table this item and ask that Mr. Miller bring it back to us for a closed session, if possible, at our next board meeting. Okay. So it will.
That brings to mind, do we want to be doing this on both 15 and 16? Do we have the same issue at the other site?
Mr. Spatafor, please.
No, I was just going to say that I discussed this with Mr. Miller earlier, and the lease agreement under number 15 does not have the same terms. There is no option. This is the final year. So
on 15, it continues for another couple of years. That one doesn't close down. The number 16, the lease ends next year. So that would be the last year of a three-year lease. Unless he picks up, he has two options of 1 year each, and the fourth year and the fifth year.
Okay. That was a good pickup there, Mr. Spatterford. I appreciate that.
Okay.
So I make a motion to table 16 and bring back on another agenda.
Okay, we have a motion to table number 16 and bring it back for closed session at our next board meeting if possible. Do I hear a second on that? Mr. Millar has seconded that. All in favor?
Aye.
Passes 6-0. Just to let everybody know, that did pass 6-0. Let's move on to item number 18, the advanced agenda items. Any comments or concerns about advanced agenda?
Can I just add one word to something?
Sure, go ahead. Mrs. Dickinson.
On a future study session, we have something listed: tolerance, school safety, violence prevention, sexual harassment prevention, training. I always read that. So it's just... Let me read that again. Tolerance, school safety, violence prevention, sexual harassment prevention training. And I was wondering if we could add sexual and gender harassment.
Yeah, my only thought is that undergoing the sexual harassment prevention training, which the county office provided to me, I think that... That's assumed.
Okay, good.
Am I wrong, Dr. Valentine, or is, I believe sexual harassment is sexual harassment?
Well, it's any kind of discrimination. We fully understood and intended to raise that issue in the study session.
Okay, great.
Mrs. Botman?
That was my question. I wanted to clarify here. It says sexual harassment prevention training, but there's no mention here of just plain old harassment, which would include verbal harassment and bullying and other things. So I wonder, could we also put a comma after training and just put harassment, any kind of harassment, which includes the items I just said? That certainly is a part of our problems in the schools.
Does that fall under the tolerance, or is that a separate item? I'm looking for some guidance from the board.
It does not fall under tolerance or school safety. Partially under, a little bit under school safety, but just plain old verbal harassment and bullying harassment and things of that nature. They don't fall under sexual harassment prevention training.
Dr. Valentine is shaking his head, so can we say bullying? Because I think that that's really sort of in today's thoughts, that that's what that would fall under.
Well, that still doesn't help. I hear kids so often verbally harass each other.
And that's why I was thinking of bullying, because to me that falls under the definition of what today we're now calling bullying, is bullying and harassment kind of things. Because I consider harassment a form of bullying.
Well, make it bullying and harassment. I just want to make sure that one gets in there for the verbal.
Dr. Valentine?
We can work with that.
Everybody, does that work for everybody? Okay, good. Anybody else who has interests or issues for the advanced agenda?
Mr. President, I just want to mention, I had mentioned earlier about the minutes on page 3, and I don't know if this is a time I would like to have perhaps an agenda item on the growing problem that I talked about, where the special education teachers came and met with us in our study session. Maybe by the end of April, some kind of information on what the situation is for. They particularly said, and I've heard this from others, that, I'll read it again, teachers described facing, now this is a regular classroom teacher, described facing increased challenges as more students with severe needs are mainstreamed. All right, and that's the problem, and urged the board to provide additional support based on specific cases rather than a formula. And I wondered if we could have information about that brought back to us just as an agenda item, not next month. I think we're kind of crowding up now, but maybe the month after.
My only concern, and I would look for other board members to discuss this, is how would impacts be defined in the classroom? That would be something that I would have an interest in. Before we actually generally talked about that, that has a lot of it's a fairly broad term, and I'd like to know more about that. And that's going to be a tough one, Mr. Spadafore.
Well, I was just going to suggest, and in a further agenda item, just have a follow-up to our special session to discuss what has developed from that special session in terms of what was discussed, what was raised, not to let it just become isolated.
If I could, and we certainly can bring in a separate agenda item, but part of the interest in tonight's presentation on strategic planning was to suggest that we would bring in proposals to the board on how to address special education issues. We heard loud and clear what the concerns were, and I agree with them, and I heard what Mrs. Botwin just read. I don't know in another session whether we would hear anything different than that. The only thing we could do is ask for greater specificity, which we couldn't get in a board meeting because we'd have to start talking about specific cases. I'm wondering if the board would entertain that this is part of the strategic planning discussion and could come forward in that context.
Actually, I think it would get too generalized. Ed, that's a good idea to keep it part of the... But I think it would get too generalized and perhaps watered down. I kind of like John's idea to have some feedback on what we saw, what we heard, and maybe there's some specific areas like that that we could request further information. For example, 3 years ago, how many students... How many special students were put into the average, let's just grab a class, second grade? And how many were mainstream, let's say, 3-5 years ago? How many last year? How many this year? And get some kind of information on some of these immediate challenges that we have in our classrooms, along with a general evaluation of the special education situation.
And then just to add to this, I would also say that, Dr. Valentine, your comment about the modules, presenting the modules, a module on special education could certainly address what the staff felt came out of the special session also. And I think that's what you're referring to in a way, is that a module will contain suggestions, direction, and development of those ideas that were discussed there, and obviously from other places, because we didn't cover everything that night. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, thank you. And we discussed the special education study session in the days following the study session and went over item by item what we heard and began the process of doing exactly that.
Mrs. Roger and then Mrs. Dickinson.
On the night that we had the study session, I mentioned that it was just such a learning experience for me, you know, and that it gave rise to a number of questions. And what it also did that was wonderful to me is that I think that we expressed to people who are actually working in the special education field that the board has a real interest in their work and their special challenges. And so subsequent to that meeting, you know, I have spoken to some people, and they feel able to express more about what they're dealing with on a daily basis, ways that they feel they could be more successful. And it's great to be able to talk to them, because if you're the parent of a general education child, it's just a world that you don't experience. So I have been sort of compiling my own list of questions and thoughts that I thought I would submit to you. I don't know what other board members are doing, and I don't know that I necessarily have a timeline for getting it into you, but I would like to talk to more people as I wander around and cross paths with them. I don't know if we're planning on having a study session volume 2 or where we're headed with with special ed, but I certainly see that it's really up for us. It's up for us this year and every year in the future, I think.
I don't really support special ed session two. I think that even though I thought it was extremely great, and things like we need SDC in junior high, I mean, you know, little concerns and pleas, you might say, you know, totally do stick with our minds as board members. But I support Dr. Valentine's idea that these things are heard and have been heard by us and by staff, and they will come out in, you know, in the way the budget's presented and all these strategic planning areas. And Dr. Valentine could, like, red flag it for us, like, this part, you know, does address that, if we want to kind of be aware of how the threads of special ed are going to go through it. But, you know, special education is impacted by so many different things. You don't, just like special education doesn't want to be an isolated entity, you know, it's going to be addressed in multiple ways in the strategic plans, you know, staffing and just programs, and everything is going to affect it, and the budget and all. And so I would prefer to let Dr. Valentine proceed the way he's planning, because I do have faith that those things will be addressed, and we're going to be alert, you know, to bring up our questions and things as budgets and decisions are made, because we heard that and we're concerned about it. Yes.
The other thing I would point to is that here on the future study sessions, we've got three listed graduation requirements coming up this month, and we've got two others. In the meantime, we're also going to be having budget discussions for at least two of our meetings for the rest of the year, and two meetings, would you say, or possibly three, Russell? No more than two, and we will be bringing that. We will be talking about that in the strategic plans and the how we get from the strategic plan to the budget process. I would support you, Mrs. Dickinson, although I know that was an issue, Mrs. Botwin, and so I would like it if we could look at in some way the impact of special education on the classrooms. I'm not sure how we can get there. And the other thing is that I think Mrs. Kirk-Martinez put a lot of effort into the last study session, and at this point I'm not sure how much more we can ask her to do, taking away from the job that I know she's working on right now. So is there a compromise we can come up with so that we can get the information that Mrs. Botwin is more interested in, but know that we need to move forward on this other stuff, and especially the budgeting?
Thank you, Mr. President. Chair, I don't want to cut John out of this because he had parallel ideas here, but I would be happy as I just recommended there a few minutes ago, I'd be happy to get the information. For example, typical classroom, our elementary classroom, first, second, third, let's say first 3-4 years, how many students had special, how many students with special needs were mainstreamed, let's say 5 years ago? And how many students are mainstreamed today? Okay, that's, I think, a fairly easy number to get. And maybe in a Friday packet would be fine. I would just like to see if what I was hearing from the teachers is truly a desperate situation. You can have a class of 20 students, as you do with those kids at that level, but you have two kids that are mainstreamed in there, and you are up the wall when they get out of line, and the kids are up the wall, and I'm not sure we fully appreciate or understand this unless we are involved with it. So at this point, I'd be willing, Chris, as you said, to maybe compromise here. I'd be willing just to have the information presented so that we see what the situation is, and then we can continue as planned. But I don't want to cut John out because he had some very good ideas here too.
The other question I have, and I would look at Mrs. Dickinson as well, when we talk about mainstreaming, most students in special education are actually going from the mainstream into the special education classes. I think what the teachers were talking about are a sub-classification of high impact students, and I'm not sure how we could tease some of that out fairly, but I think that that's more the issue rather than numbers of students that are being mainstreamed. It's this subset, and I don't know how to get there.
I think Dr. Valentine could get there easily. It'd be anybody outside, like the blind, physically impaired, emotionally impaired, in special ed students. Any student that is mainstreamed into a regular classroom, and I don't think that would be difficult, Chris, to get that information.
I'm gonna go over to Mrs. Dickinson. That information would typically not be difficult to find, but I'm not sure that gets to what the real issue is, which is the impact of the impact of certain students in the regular education setting. And that's going to be a tough one to get to. And I'm not suggesting that we can't get that information. My experience, though, as a special educator, is that defining the issue that you're interested in is going to be rather a bit more difficult, I think. Mrs. Dickinson?
Just in case anyone's watching who has a student who is supported in special education, many students who have IEPs are... I'm going to use the word blessings, in the classrooms that they are parts of and add wonderful and positive things. So we don't want to give an impression that problems are always created, when students in special education are in regular ed settings because they're there all the time and they have many wonderful things to contribute.
Before I get to John, I'm going to make a suggestion. I think what the issue is we're talking about here is how are we supporting students in the classrooms who are special education students, knowing that some students have more or less needs, and are we supporting something that statistically we could get to, but that would address your concern about the impacts of students in the classroom and what we're doing about it and what we could be doing better. And I think I'm going to go to Mr. Spadafor first and then back to you, Mrs. Botwin.
No, and I think that what you said is true, but I'm wondering if we're putting the cart before the horse tonight in a way, because as strategic planning goes forward, it's my understanding that there's going to be modules, there's going to be recommendations, and in those things is going to be the presentation of information, issues, recommendations, directions. We can look at those ahead of time. We can ask more questions of the presentations, of the modules, of the information that's coming through. If it doesn't quite seem correct, we can explore it further. So I think tonight may be difficult to itemize everything that we're going to look at or need to look at until we start looking at it and then add and subtract what we have. So I think as the process goes on with strategic planning, we'll have more to work with, knowing that the special session is going to be part of that.
Mrs. Botwin?
I could compromise with that. That would mean it would be a down the road away and perhaps not as... I have to admit something. Over the past several years, I've had a number of teachers that have retired, told me they retired earlier than they had planned to. And if I put a number to it, I'd have to say at least 5 in the last 3 years. And they said the reason was, even though they loved it, was because they could not handle... not the special ed, Adrian. Don't get worried about that. Not the special ed. That was not the problem. They couldn't handle all the special students that were mainstreamed into their classroom. And this had to do with hard of hearing. This had to do with sight impaired, emotionally distraught and impaired, physically impaired, that kind of thing, where they just lost it and had a very difficult time adapting. When I was watching the teachers that were sitting here in the study session, and you guys were too, I'm sure you saw the expressions on their face, and when they started talking near the end, it was now, we went with them for 2 hours, near the end when I watched them talk, and when that one teacher in particular who was sitting dead ahead across from me spoke up and talked about this mainstreaming and the problems with it in the classroom, I saw a whole lot of other heads nodding, and I saw a whole lot of other frustration. So whether we get to it,
Dr. Valentine, do you feel like you have some direction from the board here? And I think I heard a couple of things. One is, from my perspective anyway, an interest in what are we doing to support students in classrooms, which I think translates to supporting teachers. The second thing is I guess, from Mr. Spadafore's suggestion that we look at how we can fold a lot of this into the strategic planning and the modules that you'll be presenting. Is that the consensus, Mr.? Okay. All right. Let's move on then to item number 19.
Mr. Unger, could I, yes, sir. On the future agenda piece.
Absolutely.
I want to, if I might, in looking at the schedule of future board meetings, we have a board meeting in April that is in the middle of spring break. And something I would like to bring to the board at our next meeting would be some alternate ways to schedule. We would have the same number of meetings, but they would meet on different dates. To handle that so that if staff wishes to take time off when there are no students present in the district, they'd be free to do so, or if they're related to people who are on spring break, that they can spend time with their families.
I would support you bringing that back for board discussion at the next meeting. Yep. Is that okay with everybody? Okay. Let's move on to item number 19. Reports by board members and district administrators. Any board members have any reports? Mrs. Botwin.
I loved watching the board members last week at the fundraiser for the fashion show for Decades of Shade. I'm telling you, Walt Millar was something else. He came out like he was a gangster, and he was impressive. And Patty Andreen came out and flipped around the stage and was very impressive. And Chris came out, and he was an idiot. He danced, and he did all
Chippendale
these.
Came to mind when
it
I
was,
saw.
Yes, it did. I wasn't going to say it, but you did anyhow. It was delightful, and I also was very, very pleased. This is the groups that are going to New York shortly for the to attend that seminar. And it was led by, the MC was Patty's daughter, Allie, who did a wonderful job, an excellent job as MC. Anyway, I'd like to find out how much money they made for that. I also want to mention that I did attend the...
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I want to thank Mrs. Botwin for encouraging me, that might be too mild a term, to attend the Civil Service Commission meeting with her. It was a great experience. It's nice to know that you have all these hardworking folks who have knowledge of the positions involved, and they're willing to get to be involved, give all the time involved, and then our Civil Service Commissioners, of which we have a former one down at the end of the table here. So it was very gratifying. I always like going to these kinds of events where you get to see our district personnel and community members working together and taking care of these really complicated and, may I just say, somewhat tedious job things. I mean, boy. But I appreciate Mrs. Botwin encouraging me to be a better board member, as she has. I'd also just like to mention I'm the slow San Luis Obispo International Film Festival, which will be in March. I don't have the dates in front of me, but in early March, we'll be honoring Morgan Freeman, and I'm on the board of the film festival, and they would like to encourage primarily secondary students, because of the nature of some of the films that are shown, who are interested in visual and performing arts, to attend some of the films and are willing to provide passes for that. I've already mentioned it to Dr. Matakovich, and hopefully some of the comprehensive high school visual and performing arts folks will let us know if they have students who are interested in attending. My last item is I want to acknowledge the SLO High School Skills USA teams, not the least of which was my son Gordon, who won his division for architectural drafting. And both the architectural drafting, automotive diagnosis repair competition, and I don't know what other teams went. They went up to Salinas. I'd also like to acknowledge the parents who had to have their child at the school at 5:50 in the morning on Saturday. And last but not least, again, a plug for PB High School's mock trial team fantastic group of kids. 6 o'clock on Thursday at the courthouse. Come watch them do their thing.
And the 15th also.
Oh, I keep forgetting, and then the 15th too, but just 1 week at a time.
Mrs. Dickinson.
I know Chris really wanted to be that board representative to the County Board of Education. And I got that job, and then I rushed home from school. Was it last time to meet? So anyway, they must have planned their menu for the honoring the classified employees without me. But I hope I can go to the next one, because I want to be a good representative.
Right, and I think just what Mrs. Dickinson is talking about is there is a San Luis Obispo County School Board Association, and they do at least two events every year. One of the events they do in November is the Teacher of the Year dinner, and then this year there will be a Classified Employee of the Year dinner as well. And so that will be in the spring, and that's something that we're all looking forward to. I just wanted to say that Dr. Valentine and I went to the Tri-Counties Education Coalition meeting Thursday. We heard a great talk from Rick Simpson, who is the chief legislative aide for Fabian Nunez, the Speaker of the Assembly in California, and we spent well over an hour just really getting some great insights into what goes on in Sacramento and what's going on in Sacramento. A lot of it was real interesting, and I think one of the things that I got out of it was when we look at the state of our budget, and I think this is how he put it, is that the Democratic Party borrows to fund their programs, and the Republican Party borrows to avoid tax increases, and that's one of the ways that we've gotten to where we are with the multi-billion dollar long-term debt that the state of California owes. It was quite interesting, and I thank Rick Simpson and the Tri-Counties Education Coalition. In March, we'll be presenting a panel discussion from various groups throughout California, members of the Education Coalition, where they'll be talking about educational issues in California. I don't have the date of that. Mr. Buckman, do you have the date of that right now? March 31st? Yeah, that sounds about right. It will also be down in Goleta. And then just a reminder to everybody that on the 25th, we've got a busy day on the 25th, as long as we not only have the Cuesta Jazz Festival that day, but it's also the Teach Telethon. And I think most of us are going to be there answering phones. We're going to see a lot of acts from the various schools. I know lots of folks have been invited for it. Mr. Millar is going to be singing, he says. Have a silent auction. Lori Newman, one of the board members of Teach, says that it's really great and a whole lot of fun. And I also want to thank not only all the people that have helped to make...
The ultimate determination, I think, will be based upon criteria in the application, but also on performance on the test this spring. So we'll keep our eye on that. And also pleased to report that this past Thursday, Pacific Beach High School underwent its visitation for model continuation high school status, and my understanding, Dr. Matakovich officiated at that as we were at the Tri-Counties, but my understanding is that went very, very well, and we await the outcome of that as well.
Anything else? Do I hear a motion to... we have a motion to adjourn by Mr. Millar, seconded by Mrs. Dickinson. All in favor?
Aye.
Passes 6-0.